content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State Magazine. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Today we will continue on in the Our State Magazine and cover the Homespun Memories section. If you'll remember from Elizabeth's columns, she was talking about the textile industry in North Carolina, or the history of the textile industry in North Carolina. And these little articles will follow on that theme. The first one is Sewing Our Stories. The next one is Queen of Quilts. And the third one is Cut from the Same Cloth. And then finally, It Takes a Mill Village. And then we'll see if we have some other items that we can add to that. This is called the textiles issue, they're calling this. The textile industry has long loomed large in North Carolina, bringing jobs into our communities, beauty into our homes, and the clothing that keeps us warm when winter sets in. This season, we pay tribute to the many facets of fabric, the needlework artist who stitches stories into art for our walls, the quilter who teaches us how to make patchwork blankets for our beds, and the mighty Catawba River that's fueled so many cotton and hosiery mills in our state. The yarn used in Local Cloth's Blue Ridge Blankets project in Asheville is a blend of wool procured from sheep, goat, and alpaca farms across western North Carolina. And the photo is of four different blankets with different weaving techniques, different color themes, and using those fibers that were just mentioned. Sewing Our Stories. Raleigh singer and fabric artist Caitlin Carey captures memories and stirs emotions with her voice and with a needle and thread. So looking, and there's several of her works depicted here in this. It says Caitlin Carey's needle prints depict Raleigh landmarks, including the Dorton Arena, Rialto Theater, and the Krispy Kreme Donut Shop on North Person Street. And those are very detailed, some of which are in certain panels that have been pulled together to make the entire work of art. In fact, most of these are individual panels, square panels or rectangular panels that are stitched and then pulled together into one work of art. There's one from the Gables Motel Lodge on Person Street, if you know that. There's at Rebus Works, which is part grocery store and part cafe, part gallery, that's celebrating its 20th anniversary in downtown Raleigh. Needle prints created by Caitlin Carey share wall space with other local artists. If you're interested in learning more about that particular venue, it's rebusworks.us, and that's R-E-B-U-S works, W-O-R-K-S.us. Okay. Stories are the bedrock of human nature. Before we could speak, we sang. Before we could write our stories down, we painted them on walls. When many of us could not read our tales, we sewed them into quilts to tuck around our beloveds, to fold and to pass down to people who might be born long after we're gone. Caitlin Carey is a storyteller in the truest sense. Before she crafted her tales for walls, she sang them into crowds at places like South by Southwest Music Festival in Austin, Texas, and on The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson. She pulled her bow over violin strings and sang. She sang alone during an acclaimed solo career and sang in bands like Whiskey Town, Trey Chicas, and The Small Ponds. She told her stories in her songs of her friends and loves, of heartache and discovery. She sang the stories of people she knew, of ourselves, of secrets and ideas we'd want to tell the world. Between shows, Carey piled into vans with her bandmates and instruments. Her voice was quiet, but her hands still moved. Her fingers curled and lifted. Instead of pulling a bow over violin strings, she pulled thread through cloth. I used to draw things and embroider them in the van, Carrie says. My hands just seemed to always have to be busy. Over time, her work became larger. Her storytelling began to change. Instead of the accounts that she tells in song, Carrie began to capture the complicated tales that are woven within the pieces we love. I was thinking about what made my home of Raleigh feel like Raleigh to me and to other people too, she says. She took photographs of places she loves, like Cup of Joe on Hillsborough Street, the Dorton Arena at the fairgrounds, Krispy Kreme on Person Street, Char Grill, the Round Holiday Inn. With bits of material gleaned from cast-offs and gifted from friends and strangers, Carrie wove these iconic Raleigh images into quilt-adjacent fabric collages, or needle prints, as she calls them. Just as early quilts were first made of fabric scraps, a swatch of grandmother's apron, a square of a brother's old pants, Carrie's creations tell their own stories. A lot of us have histories of either making fabric or seeing people make it. It's a legacy for our state, she says. Sewing these buildings into the fabrics is a way of adding to the stories of these places. So there are two photographs. She has a picture of the original Char Grill on Hillsborough Street at the bottom, and it is, again, several panels knitted together, or not knitted together, but placed together to make the one collage, if you will. And she says, I love what fabric does to make sentimental subjects even more meaningful, Carrie says. And then there's a photo of her actually at her sewing machine, and you see her hands stitching the actual fabric into place. Continuing on with her story, the next page, each of Carrie's stitches is deliberate. Each texture, pattern, and juxtaposition selected, signifiers of existence. Of course, the real windows in downtown storefronts aren't formed from swatches of upholstery woven from colored threads, and ribbons of fabric don't line its train tracks, nor do wisps of filament clouds puff across a robin's egg sky. Of course, cloth children don't cut with yarn scissors. Cloth people don't buy textile movie tickets or drink coffee from woven cups. Of course, the underpinnings of our water towers aren't spangles of tie silk. Carrie gets to choose the parts of our shared memories to document. She chooses their textures. She and her husband, musician and silkscreen artist Skillet Gilmore, often travel around the state to find subjects for her needle prints. When Gilmore takes the wheel, he's learned to prepare to brake quickly. Skillet and I get in the car and drive around, and I'll say, stop! No, I mean now, stop! Carrie says. I'll jump out and take some pictures of a rad building. He's getting much better about it. It used to drive him crazy. The places revealed in her collection of needle prints work as a chronicle of our own sense of place, our own memories across the state. The Atlantis Lodge in Atlantic Beach, Oxford High School, a shoe store in Wilkesboro, a millworks in Wilson, some humble, some regal, but all part of North Carolina's rich and complicated fabric. So who do we trust to keep our stories? Who do we trust to tell them? Our witnesses, those people who were there when it happened. Since she began crafting her needleprints more than 10 years ago, many of the places that Carrie has preserved across the state have been knocked down in the name of progress. Others are slated for removal. Once something is gone, it can be hard to remember what it was like. Eventually, we can forget it was ever even there. Carrie bears witness to these places we love. Her needle prints of them will last longer than the places will. Her stitches suture our memories of time, memories of them to the time that runs beyond them. They will tell stories of our places to a time that runs beyond us. The writer is Eleanor Spicer Wright, who loves the fabric of Raleigh where she lives with her family. For more information about Caitlin Carey's work, visit CaitlinCarey.com. That's Caitlin, CaitlinCarey, CARY.com. And this photo says, Carrie pieces together bits of material to create works of fine art that find their way into local galleries and onto collectors' walls. And is showing her piecing together several of the panels that will end up being the final work, the complete work of art, I should say. The next article is Queen of Quilts. Writer Amy Bonesteel Smith grew up watching her mother, Georgia Bonesteel, share her love of quilting in books, on television, and in the classroom. A daughter reflects on how her mother's lifelong passion for teaching innovative quilting techniques and creating patchwork masterpieces influenced their Hendersonville community and beyond. The first thing that comes to mind when I think of my mother are her powerful, sinewy, and beautiful hands. As the daughter of famous quilter Georgia Bonesteel, I thought they could just about make anything. When they weren't cutting material, guiding stitches through the sewing machine, or washing dishes, one of her hands would reach over the passenger seat to hold mine during long car rides. With my dad at the wheel, my brothers and I vied for the busy hand's attention. When I was 9, my family relocated to Hendersonville, then a small town. As with previous moves, my parents were quick to experience the local culture. We attended Friday night community auctions on King Street, watched clogging at the Apple Festival, went hiking in Pisgah National Forest. Southern draws, gravel roads, and generations of hardworking people who'd settled in the mountains became part of our everyday lives. As the daughter of a federal prosecutor, my mother moved numerous times during her own childhood, and she was quick to embrace the fabric of a community. Likewise, before we settled in Hendersonville, we moved frequently because my dad worked as an auditor for Shell Oil. Originally from the Chicago area, where my parents met and married, we also lived in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Tulsa, Oklahoma, and then New Orleans in the late 1960s. In Louisiana, before the rest of us could learn how to crack open a crawfish, my mother was dishing up weekly meals of red beans and rice, loading us into the station wagon to get hot beignets from Café du Monde, and participating in bicycle races that wove through the French Quarter. New Orleans was also where she began her career as a seamstress. She had learned of a Saturday contest held at nearby Krauss department store where participants modeled outfits that they'd made during using the store's fabrics. The prize? A chance for a spot on a local daytime TV program that demonstrated how to make home decor and clothing on a Sears Kenmore sewing machine. A home economics, clothing, and textile major in college, my mom landed the spot by wearing a swinging 60s vest dress ensemble that she made. It may have helped that she was also a Jane Pauley lookalike. Several years later, in 1974, Henderson County, the Carl Sandburg Home National Historic Site had just opened in Flat Rock, and my mom was one of the first volunteers. She also found a job teaching sewing at Henderson County Technical Institute, now Blue Ridge Community College, after going there to show the patchwork bags she'd made using my dad's old neckties. A request for full-size quilts led her to explore the craft, and she rushed to learn and to teach in that order. She pioneered her own method of lap quilting, working on one block at a time and employing a sewing machine for the quilt top construction, which eliminated the need for a bulky frame. I'm proud to say that our adult learning class became the most filled on campus, she wrote in her 2018 memoir and pattern book, Scrap Happy Quilts. But it was my grandmother's suggestion that my mom should pitch a quilting how-to show to UNC Chapel Hill's PBS station that led to her regional breakout. Producers loved the concept. And in 1976, she filmed at UNC's Swain Hall. 30-minute episodes of lap quilting with Georgia Bonesteel followed, and the show continued for 12 seasons. She initially incorporated our hometown into her shows by featuring quilters from her classes and those she met in the Asheville-Hendersonville area. As the founder and first president of the Western North Carolina Quilters Guild and a founding member of two more local guilds, she made the craft official, and dozens of quilters joined and connected with one another. As my mother's confidence grew, her creativity flourished. Inspired by our surroundings, many of her original designs included the rolling hills of the Blue Ridge Mountains. While sewing, she eagerly employed innovative techniques and tools like grid grip, a quarter-inch grid printed on freezer paper that she invented and trademarked. Her growing success and numerous commitments allowed my parents to purchase a hardware store, and my dad subsequently left his job at Shell. The business kept him in Hendersonville, and my mom juggled work, cooking family dinners, and attending my school and sports activities. In a neighborhood of ranch-style houses, we lived in a curiously designed home off Canoga Road. It had a circular gravel driveway, a covered passageway where cars could drive through the center of our home, a flat roof, and an upstairs kitchen. A downstairs quilt studio was added later. It was positioned thoughtfully so my mom could perch at her sewing machine and look out into the yard. Before she moved into her studio, my mom's projects, patterns, implements, and swaths of fabric, were scattered across the upstairs dining room table. Most of our daily meals were eaten in the kitchen, leaving the dining room table empty for her quilting until a holiday meal took priority. It's embarrassing to admit, but we were often too distracted to notice the amazing creativity that was on display right in front of us as we hurried to school, jobs, and social activities. But no matter how beautiful my mother's quilts are, they were secondary to her teaching. Over the years, countless people have asked me how to buy one of her quilts, and I always explain that she is above all a teacher. Selling quilts was never her primary ambition, although her artistic designs have won dozens of awards. The second most asked question I get is, "Do you quilt?" I do not, having neither the patience nor the knack for sewing. My mother says that quilting skips generations. Her great-grandmother, Lottie, was a magnificent seamstress and quilter, and although her mother, Virginia, could sew well, she never quite caught the quilting bug. When I was a senior at East Carolina University in 1985, my mother was diagnosed with a brain tumor, an event that threw our family for a loop. I remember the long drive across the state on I-40 to visit her in Asheville's Memorial Mission Hospital, my thoughts of college and graduation momentarily pushed aside. Thankfully, it turned out to be a non-malignant acoustic neuroma. True to form, she did not let it slow her down for long. She continued her series for UNC-TV and went on to publish 10 books. Her focus was always on her students. Meeting quilters and answering their questions and emails still inspires her at age 87 to continue teaching. As time passed, my brothers, dad, and I saw that we were one triangle, or four, in the colorful design that makes up my mom's piece-worked, queen-size quilt of life. Important ones, sure, but still just a few of her many passions. Since I moved back to Hendersonville area in 2021, after being away for 35 years, I've seen that my mother makes up her very own blue zone, the name given to parts of the world where seniors remain extraordinarily active and live longer. Besides teaching quilting, she is a caregiver for my dad and a master gardener who volunteers at least twice a week. She's also in a book club and a Bible study and plays hours of Rummy Cube every week. People like my mom show us all how to keep going. For her 80th birthday, her grandchildren sang an original song written by my daughter, Georgia, called Color Outside the Lines, which perfectly describes my mother's approach to art. Long may she keep coloring. And I'll go back into the article and give you a little insight into some of some of the photos that are here. So back at the beginning of the article, there's this fascinating little runner along one of the quilts, and there are realistic looking chipmunks that she has quilted into this particular panel. They're doing all sorts of antics. Some are crouched down. Others are reaching up. And it's very, very beautiful work there. Then there's a picture of Georgia herself at her sewing machine doing some work. And she even looks like she used some repurposed scraps of fabric, including silk neckties, in her patchwork purses. Excuse me. She shared her quilting ingenuity on a popular PBS program that started in the 70s, which we've already mentioned. But she has some little fold-over purses that are made from silk ties. They're beautiful. And they have like a gold strap and some golden, looks like some chains, some of those. And some of them are crocheted handles. So very, very interesting. And there's also a picture of her on TV on one of her episodes for PBS, the quilting in her younger days. And then there's a picture of sort of a display of several of her books. The one in the center is a how-to memoir with 25 quilts to make, and it's called Scrap Happy Quilts from Georgia Bonesteel. And I think that's a very interesting. The next one is a shorter article called Stitch Together. In Rutherford County, the threads of friendship continue to connect to loved ones in a treasured 90-year-old quilt. And there's a beautiful quilt with a grid and then quilted circles in there, which each segment of the circle is different fabric. And there's a name inside. We'll find out who the name is. This article is by Rebecca Woltz. And over the years, before Catherine Mooney Wall's heirloom friendship quilt hung in the Golden Valley Community Club in Rutherford County, she would pull it out of her cedar chest, run her hands over the embroidery, and think about the people whose names are stitched into the fabric. Each of the 25 squares includes the name of a person in her Aunt Lily Mae Mooney's life, her stepmother, her sisters, her neighbors and friends, as well as scraps of material left over from when they made their dresses. Mooney likely wrote each name in a neat cursive before the letters were embroidered. At 94, Wall believes she's the only person named on the more than 90-year-old quilt who is still alive. After decades of searching, Wall was thrilled to find a piece to display her friendship quilt. She had inherited it from her Aunt Jetty Mooney, but had no one to leave it to. Wall, who lives in Shelby, wanted the quilt to be displayed in Golden Valley, where it was created. "That was my heart's desire," she says. "Now it hangs on a wall in the community club there, across the street from the church where her grandparents are buried. Finally, after nearly a century, the quilt has come home." Cut from the same cloth. A textile studio in Asheville rallies a community of farmers, artists, and weavers around the Blue Ridge Fiber Shed, where local cloth is homegrown, from fleece to fabric. One freezing night a couple of winters ago, as a bracing wind swept through the streets of Asheville's River Arts District, a group of textile artists gathered for a class inside the cozy local cloth studio, surrounded by baskets of soft yarn and shelves of bright fabric. The organization's founder and CEO, Judy Jetson, was leading a team in washing and dyeing wool sheared from sheep in the region. As a pickup truck pulled up outside, someone peered out the studio window and shouted, "Hey, Judy, it's one of your farmers. He's dragging a body bag?" Jetson recalls the moment. "I walked out and, holy moly, it was 200 pounds of wool," she said. For months, she'd been gathering fiber, almost one animal's worth at a time, from farms around western North Carolina for the most ambitious effort in local cloth's history, the Blue Ridge Blankets Project, intended to unite farmers and weavers and create a foundation for a new fiber economy in the region. Last fall, after 3 years of work, the first production run of blankets went on sale. Made with fiber from within 100 miles of Asheville, the patterns are named for the communities where the animals that contributed to their fleece were raised. "This is Asheville," says Jetson, running her fingers over a fabric swatch in a thick binder she holds on her lap at the studio. The fleece from that body bag and from the more than a dozen other farms across the region has been translated into a luxurious yarn spun from a mix of sheep's wool, mohair, and alpaca that Jetson calls the Blue Ridge Blend. Local cloth members use natural dyes to create the gentle colors, walnut brown, madder red, tick seed yellow, indigo blue, and a quiet green created by overdyeing the latter two that run in stripes through the ivory background. Jetson turns to another sample. The same soft shades appear in thicker crisscross bands. This is Black Mountain. The blankets represent a triumph for Jetson, a self-described fiber activist and lifelong lover of textile craft. Her grandmother taught her to knit when Jetson was 5, and she has continued learning new skills ever since. Tie-dyeing and batik in the 1960s, weaving in the 1980s, spinning in recent years. Over the decades, she's also built a career in economic development, working for agencies like the U.S. Small Business Administration and nonprofits like Handmade America, which combine her passions for community and craft and broader into the Asheville area. In 2011, she launched Local Cloth to connect farmers, artists, and customers, and to create a model for other traditional crafts. "When we started, no one was talking about supply chain," she says. "Now everyone is. And I don't look at the world like an artist. I look at the world and think, what are the economic opportunities?" We've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.